At dinner time, I had chips, a bottle of milk, a packet of crisps, and a small packet of biscuits, and a drink of Tango orange drink.
This kind of industrial food is very common now because it's easier to buy and just give the babies the food instead of preparing everything every day.
I like the normal food, but I would like to have some junk food at sometimes, twice a week.
The industrialization of food has led us to make unprecedented changes to human diets. And unfortunately, in doing so, we have made unprecedented changes to the brain's functional and environment, because basically what we eat is going to go directly into the blood supply.
Over the last 20, 30 years, scientists have become more and more convinced about a link between our diets and the way we behave, feel, and think. At the same time, the industrialization of food has proceeded apace, with little apparent consideration given to its possible impact on our brains. Previously, researchers suspected that ingredients in highly processed foods, such as chemical additives, were implicated in antisocial behavior, for example. Now, increasingly, a deficiency in the diet is seen as the bigger culprit. In this edition of the BBC's Discovery program, we'll be looking at some of the latest evidence. Now, critics argue that scientists are still foraging in the dark, that research has not yet made a convincing cast-iron case linking specific individual nutrients to adverse effects on behaviour and mood. And neither is there agreement on the need for wide-scale prescription of supplements. Even so, there's no shortage of people testifying to dramatic changes of behaviour brought about by altering our diets. Bernard Gesch of the University of Oxford is an expert in the field. He's worked in the UK's criminal justice system, where the perpetrators of some crimes receive sentences that include a dietary prescription. Dr. Gesch recalls the remarkable case of a repeat offender who benefited from this enlightened system.
All he ever used to do was steal trucks in the early hours of the morning. The court became somewhat exasperated with him because on the three occasions he was released from prison, he chose to steal a truck to return home. Now, we assessed him and we actually found he had a condition known as flat curve hypoglycemia. And indeed, if you looked at his diet, his behaviour began to make a great deal of sense, because he was absolutely shoveling in stimulants such as coffee, sugar, etc. And by the end of the day, which is when he was stealing the trucks, he, by his own admission, was high as a kite. And what we found was that by giving him some supplements to improve his sugar control, he stopped offending.
But it's not just about sugar intake. There's another major group of components of our diets which dominate the very fabric of the brain and its functioning. The psychiatrist Joseph Hiblin of the US National Institutes of Health has been intrigued by them since his early days at medical school.
When I was a medical student in the neuroanatomy lab, at a brain cutting, I held a brain and I was looking at it and I said, well, what's this stuff made of? It's not protein, it's not bone, it's not muscle. This brain is made almost entirety of fats and lipids. So it was not, to my mind, a great jump to say, well, if there's a biochemical abnormality regulating the composition of the lipids in the brain might not function well. And as a psychiatrist, I look at emotion and cognition and those human brain functions as signs that the brain's not functioning well.
So lipids and fats are important components of the brain. And in recent years, the attention of researchers has been drawn to the essential fatty acids. Essential because we can't make them ourselves. We have to have them in the food we eat. There are two main varieties. The omega-3 fatty acids are found in fish, other kinds of seafood, and green leafy vegetables. Another type, the omega-6s, are found in vegetable oils, nuts, and grains. We need both of them, but the balance between the two is crucial.